Welcome to The Awakened Homeowner. Thinking about a new home or remodel, but feeling lost in a maze of decisions? You're in the right place. I'm William Reed, and for over three decades, I've coordinated the design and construction of hundreds of remodel and new home projects. I know the process can feel overwhelming, but trust me, you can do this. Here, we break it all down step by step so you can feel confident, empowered, and even excited about your project. No stress, no guesswork, just the guidance you need to bring your dream home to life. Let's dive in. All right. Welcome back to the Awakened Homeowner Podcast. I'm Bill Reed, your home building coach, and this is episode 38 in our Understanding Design Limitations series. So now that we've spent the last several episodes talking about city and county regulations, zoning codes, floor area ratio calculations, setbacks, easements, and all these governmental restrictions that affect what you can build on your property. And if you've been following along, you might be thinking, okay, Bill, I get it. I need to understand the city rules before I start designing. And you are absolutely right. But here's the thing, and this catches thousands of homeowners by surprise every single year. City approval is only half the battle. Because if your property is in a planned community or any development with a homeowners association, you've got a completely separate set of design rules to follow. And in many cases, these HOA restrictions are even more limiting than what your city requires. I'm talking about HOAs, homeowner associations. And today, we're going to be pulling back the curtain on how these organizations control what you can build, what the design approval process really looks like, and most importantly, how to navigate this system successfully instead of getting blindsided by it. And here's why this matters so much. Let's say you fall in love with a beautiful lot in a planned community, amazing views, perfect size, great location. You buy it. You hire an architect. You start designing your dream home. 3 months and let's say $25,000 in architectural fees later, you submit your plans to the HOA design review committee and they deny your application. Wrong architectural style. House is too large for the neighborhood character. Paint colors don't fit community guidelines. Whatever the reason, you're back to square one. This happens way more often than you'd think, and it often starts with not hiring the right design professionals. So for those of you enthused with getting really, really inexpensive design fees, doing it on your own, managing the process on your own, be aware because you are a prime victim for this situation if you're in an HOA. And the reason is simple. Homeowners don't understand that HOAs operate as a parallel authority alongside your city or county. You need both approvals, and they don't coordinate with each other. You're responsible for making sure your project satisfies both set of rules. So today, we're going to demystify HOAs, understand what power they actually have, look at the most common restrictions they impose, walk through their design review process step by step, and talk about the political strategy. Yes, there's a political component to this that can mean the difference between approval and denial. This is essential knowledge. Whether you're buying property in an HOA community, you already own there and want to expand, or you're just in the research phase trying to figure out if HOA living is right for you. So let's go ahead and dig in to this episode, and by the end, you should be truly empowered to make informed decisions. Okay, so let's start with the basics. What exactly is a homeowners association and how do they get so much power over your property? Because I guarantee you, most homeowners don't really understand this until it's too late. They know HOAs collect money, dues, and have rules about lawn maintenance, but they're shocked when the HOA tells them they can't build what they want on their property they own. So let's clear this up right now. First, an HOA is not a governmental entity. This is important. They're not like your city planning department or your building department. An HOA is a private organization, usually a nonprofit corporation that governs a residential community And here's the key. Membership is mandatory and automatic when you buy property in that community. So how does this work? HOAs are typically formed when developers create planned communities or subdivisions, and the developer establishes the rules that creates the HOA. And then every single person who buys property in that community automatically becomes a member. You have really no choice. You don't get to opt out. You don't get to say, well, I don't want to be part of the HOA. When you buy the property, you're in. And here's what's really important. You're bound by the HOA's governing documents, whether you read them or not. And let me tell you, most people don't read them thoroughly. They're in that huge stack of papers you get at closing, and everybody just signs and initials and moves on. But those documents, they're going to control a lot of what you can do with your property. The HOA is run by a board of directors, and these are homeowners elected from the community. Sometimes it's three people, sometimes it's seven. Depends on the size of the community, and these board members are volunteers. They're your neighbors. They're not professionals usually. They're just people who live in the community who volunteer to serve on the board. It's often that many of the members of a design review committee inside an HOA do not have experience in construction, in design. They come from all areas of careers and professions. And if you don't get anybody on the board that has any experience in design and construction, you could have an uphill battle on your hands. And here's the critical piece. HOA rules are enforced through contractual law, not governmental regulation. So this isn't like violating a building code where you might get a warning from the city. When you violate HOA rules, they can fine you, they can take you to court, and they can force you to undo whatever you did because you signed a contract agreeing to their rules. So I've seen homeowners who bought a property, fell in love with a lot, never looked at the HOA documents, hired an architect, designed this beautiful modern home, and then found out the HOA only allows Mediterranean-style architecture. And guess what? They had to start over from scratch. Thousands of folks have fallen in love with a lot and purchased it on the spot, and then come to find out they were heavily restricted in terms of what size and style of the home could be built. It's heartbreaking, but it happens all the time. So HOAs aren't the government, but they do have the legal power. And where does that power actually come from? That's what we need to understand next. The power of your HOA comes from legal documents called the CC&Rs, not the band. This is the covenants, conditions, and restrictions. And here's what most homeowners miss. When you bought your property, you agreed to these restrictions. They're not optional. They're not suggestions. They're legally binding requirements that you signed up for. So how does this work? CC&Rs are recorded documents within the county, and they run with the land. That's the legal phrase. It means that these restrictions are attached to the property itself, not to you personally. So when you sell your house, the next owner is bound by the same CC&Rs and the owner after that. These restrictions stay with the property forever unless they're formally amended through the HOA process. And these are contractual obligations. They're enforceable in court. If you violate the CC&Rs, the HOA can take legal action against you, and they can get an injunction forcing you to comply. They can fine you. They can put a lien on your property. This is serious stuff. So what's typically in CC&Rs? Well, they usually include architectural standards and design guidelines. That's a big one we're talking about today. They include property use restrictions, like you can't run a commercial business out of your home, or you can't park an RV in your driveway. They include maintenance requirements. Your lawn has to be kept up a certain way. You have to repaint your house every so many years. They include rules and procedures, how the HOA can fine you, and what the appeals process looks like. And they usually include a fine schedule, $25 a day, et cetera. And here's the thing. You receive these documents at the closing when you bought your property, and they were in that huge stack, you know, I mentioned earlier, but most people don't read them. And I mean, who wants to read a 50-page legal document when you're excited about buying your dream property? But buried in those pages might be the rule that says your home can't exceed 3,500 square feet, even though the city zoning would allow 5,000 square feet, for example. And here's the question I get all the time. Well, which rule controls? The city rule or the HOA rule? And the answer is both. You have to satisfy both, and when they're different, you have to meet the more restrictive requirement. So if the city says you can build 5,000 square feet, but the HOA says 3,500, guess what? You're building 3,500. You've got to satisfy both. And when you're going through the planning and building permit approval process, and you're in a recorded homeowners association, at one point or another during the approval process at your city or at your county, they're going to require a letter of approval from your HOA to include in the approval package. Otherwise, they will not approve your project. So most HOAs also have separate, more detailed design guidelines documents. These might not be recorded with the county like the CC&Rs, but they're still binding. They spell out exactly what colors you can use, what materials are allowed, what architectural styles are permitted, all of that detail. So you're bound by these CC&Rs, but what exactly do they restrict? That's where it gets interesting and frustrating for homeowners. So here's what HOAs can control. Basically anything visible from the street or that affects your neighbors. And here's what they can't control, the interior of your home. So let's break that down. HOAs focus on the exterior and visible elements. We're talking about architectural style, whether you can build a Tudor, Mediterranean, contemporary, whatever, exterior colors, siding color, trim color, door color, shutter color, roof color, the building size and height. Some HOAs say you can only build so big or you can only go so tall. Lot coverage and building placement, where on your property you can place the house, landscaping, what types of plants you can use, whether you can put in a fence, what materials your patio can be made of, exterior lighting and fixtures, driveways and walkways, what materials, what colors, what configurations. So as you can see, it can become extremely restrictive, and knowing this ahead of time can really put you in a much better spot before you purchase or before you begin design. And, you know, you may have gone through neighborhoods where you've noticed that a lot of the homes look the same or very similar, similar colors, similar roof design, similar architectural style. And it's likely that that's because especially if it was in a custom home development or a resort development, there were very strict guidelines on what architectural style you can be built along with all of the other myriad rules and regulations. And, you know, there is a good purpose for this, and we'll talk about this as we get deeper into the episode. All right, if you're feeling overwhelmed by everything I'm covering about HOA restrictions, take a breath. I've created a solution for you. The HOA approval workbook breaks down this entire process into simple checkboxes: property due diligence, design submittal packages, neighborhood outreach templates, presentation scripts, and everything you need to get approved on the first try. It's free for 30 days, then $9.99, so don't miss this. Grab it now while it's still free. The link to it is in the show notes and in the blog post. Now let's get back to the episode. So HOAs don't typically control the interior of your home. You know, if you want to knock down a wall inside, paint your bedroom purple, install a disco ball in your living room, you know, the HOA doesn't care. That's your business. Unless you live in a condominium where you share walls with neighbors, the interior is generally off limits to the HOA. So keep in mind that if you're in a multifamily development where you're in townhouses that are connected together, condominiums, you can't just arbitrarily go in and remove an interior wall without the proper approval from the HOA, not to mention, of course, the building planning department of your city. So there is some restrictions on the HOA side, which kind of contradicts what I just said, and that's because any structural modifications you make to an existing unit could affect the structure of the entire building, where let's say there might be three or four townhouses grouped together. So be careful if you're in that type of planned unit development. But there are gray areas, windows, for example. They're visible from the outside, so the HOA might have rules about what style of windows you can install, what color the frames can be. Garage doors, they're visible, so the HOA might control that. And in some HOAs, I had a recent experience with this, they would not allow the garage door to face the street in the design. So we had to, you know, rotate the garage approximately 90 degrees or put it on an angle so that when you're driving down the road in the development, you can't see, you know, that big flat face of a garage door. I mean, I get it and I understand it. But if we didn't discover that before we began design, that would have required a significant redesign on the project. And that's what I'm getting to today, was trying to put you in a spot where you don't get yourself into that position. Solar panels, this is a hot topic right now. Some HOAs restrict them or regulate where you can place them, although there are some state laws now that are protecting solar panel installation. What I do kind of want to mention at this stage of the game, of this episode, is it is standard practice, best practice for a design professional to investigate all of these requirements before beginning design. And that should be a standard operating procedure by them. And they will often research that ahead of time. They will either meet with the HOA, the design review committee, or be able to at least download the design review guidelines off of the HOA website. They're able to factor all of that in to their design when they begin the design. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up now is that it's possible that you are thinking about purchasing a property, purchasing a new beautiful resort lot, and you didn't realize that there are design review guidelines that may not be the style that you want for your home. So that's the purpose here, is to make you first understand that it is the responsibility of a professional architect, designer, to understand this as one of the parameters of all of these other design limitations I've been speaking about. Number two, you may not have an architect or a designer yet. You're thinking about hiring one. You're thinking about purchasing a property. And that's the objective here, is to get you up to speed. So now you might be wondering why HOAs have all these restrictions and what's the point. So let me explain, you know, kind of the reasoning, because once you understand why, you'll be better equipped to work within the system. So HOAs exist for one primary reason: to protect property values by maintaining a consistent, attractive community aesthetic. Whether you agree with this mission or not, that's their core purpose. And there's actually research backing this up. Studies have shown that homes in HOA communities maintain their value better than similar homes without HOAs. And the theory is that HOAs prevent one problem property from dragging down the whole neighborhood values. You know these homes I'm talking about, the ones with the overgrown lawn, the peeling paint, the broken fence. In an HOA community, that doesn't fly. The HOA will enforce their maintenance rules and make sure the property doesn't hurt everyone else's values. So the design review committee see their roles as protecting investments. They're the gatekeepers of aesthetic standards. And honestly, some of them take this role very seriously, sometimes too seriously, in my opinion. But I have also seen in the area that I happen to live in now, there's some golf course communities, some that had an HOA but did not have any design review guidelines or restrictions, and some that did have an HOA and design review restrictions. And I can definitely see the difference, where you have a home that's built that's 2,500 square feet, nice size, good materials on the outside with textures and colors and stone and metal, and then you've got right next to it a cheap 1,200 square foot, you know, using T111 wood siding, composition roof. That just is nothing for the value of the property next door or for the overall perception and value of the neighborhood. So if you are willing to accept the responsibility and the governance of an HOA, you're probably going to be in a much better spot from an investment perspective. If you're looking for more freedom to do whatever you want, then all the more power to you. But just be prepared that you cannot have any control over what any of your neighbors do, and some of it can be pretty damn ugly, what people end up doing. So there's always this tension between, you know, individual freedom and collective community standards. Some people love HOAs because they want that uniformity and predictability. Other people hate HOAs because they feel restricted and controlled. It really comes down to your personal preference. So that's the theory and practice. This creates a situation where you need two separate approvals for your project, one from the city and one from the HOA. And here's where homeowners get really confused. So let's summarize what I've talked about so far. HOAs are private organizations, not government entities. Their power comes from the CC&Rs you agreed to when you bought the property. They control exterior and visible elements to protect property values through aesthetic consistency, and they operate independently from your city or your county. Meaning, you need both approvals to build. The dual approval system is where things get complicated because here's the reality. City approval doesn't mean HOA approval. And HOA approval doesn't mean city approval. They're separate processes, separate requirements. You are responsible for navigating both. And sometimes, and this is what really frustrates homeowners, the HOA restrictions are more strict than the city requirements. All right, so now we understand the HOAs and why they exist. Let's talk about what they actually restrict. What are the most common design limitations HOAs impose? And that's what we're going to cover next. All right, now comes that part that surprises most homeowners. What HOAs actually restrict? Because it's way more than you think. And we're not just talking about whether you can paint your house purple, though yes, they control that too. We're talking about fundamental design decisions that affect the size, style, and character of your home. So let me walk you through the most common HOA design restrictions I've encountered for 35 years of working on projects in HOA communities. And trust me, I think I've seen it all, but maybe. Maybe not. First and most significant, many HOAs dictate the actual architectural style of your home. So I'm talking about whether you can build a modern farmhouse, Mediterranean, Craftsman's, contemporary. This isn't a minor detail. This controls the entire look of your house, the entire character of the design. So many planned communities mandate specific architectural styles. Some communities are all Mediterranean, you know, tile roofs, stucco walls, arched elements, etc. Other communities are all Craftsman, low pitched roofs, exposed rafters, natural materials. And some high-end developments are all traditional, very formal, symmetrical, classic proportions. So, and the HOA design guidelines include incredibly detailed requirements. We're talking about roof pitch. The angle has to be within a certain range. Roof materials has to be tile, or it has to be a composition shingles, or it has to be slate. Exterior materials has to be stucco, or has to be siding, or has to be brick, or some combination. Some HOAs do not allow some of the fake stone facade material. They only require real stone if you were going to use masonry or stone products. Window styles, sometimes they have to be arched windows, or they have to be double hung windows, or has to be casement windows. Entry features, covered porches, or they have to have columns or no columns, certain doorways. So you're getting the idea that some communities may only offer two or three approved styles. So you've got little flexibility, but other communities are very uniform. Everybody builds the same style, and that's just how it is. And this restriction is often the biggest shock to homeowners because it fundamentally changes what they can build. You might have this vision of a beautiful modern home with clean lines and lots of glass, but if you're in a Tudor community, that's not going to fly. And let me give you an example from my own work. I once had a renovation project in a Victorian neighborhood, and this was an older established community with a lot of historic homes. And my team and I were mandated to replicate the existing windows, which had arched elements, custom milled moldings, and other unique features. This sometimes crosses over into the historical limitations that we haven't talked about, but HOAs can be the same, can also be involved in this when you were in a historic community and they are requiring you. In other words, you can't go in and put in a Milgard brand or Marvin brand window into an existing structure that you're planning to expand. It may not even be a historical structure, but it's in that zone designation. So we had to have custom windows made that cost, you know, 3, 4, 5 times more than any other typical window that you can purchase. And it doesn't stop there sometimes. The original redwood siding had to be replicated with the exact same profile. And once the project was completed, you would never know we would have touched those windows or that siding. So that was the point, to maintain the integrity of the Victorian architecture, but the cost and the time was significant. So if you end up into a homeowners association with a historical preservation overlay over the top of that, now you're really restricted. You need to know what you can and can't do before you purchase that property or before you start paying money to a design firm. And like I said before, the design firm should know what the requirements are. And they probably will if you hire a professional. But don't assume that. That's why I'm up to here today, is to, again, shed some light on this so that you don't get burned. So you may remember back in episode 33 when we talked about floor area ratio and how your city uses that to limit the size and scale of your house based on your lot size. Well, your HOA can impose additional limits that are even more restrictive. And this is where homeowners get really frustrated. Not only do HOAs set a maximum square footage, regardless of what city FAR would allow, it's not uncommon for an HOA to have a minimum amount of square footage. So one of my past recent projects, they had a minimum square footage, I believe it was 2,000 square feet. And that is to, again, to kind of adhere to the mission of an HOA, is we don't want to have a, you know, 5,000 square foot house built next to a 1,200 square foot house. And this also helped prevent people from building their guest home first and then their primary home second. So in many resort communities, you're allowed to have an accessory dwelling unit or a guest home. And some people would build the guest home and then never build the primary home. And that also affected the aesthetic value of the community. So be prepared, just because you're allowed to build an accessory dwelling unit or a guest home, that you may not be able to build that first. Also, HOAs may restrict whether you can build a single story versus a two-story home. Some communities are all single story to maintain a low profile. Other communities allow two-story, but with additional restrictions on the second floor. They might also set height maximums that are lower than what the city allows, or they might restrict lot coverage. It's the percentage of your lot that could be covered by buildings to a number that's more restrictive than the city's requirements, or they might restrict building footprint to preserve views or setback areas. The reason HOAs do this is to prevent what they call the McMansions, those huge houses that dwarf everything around them. They want to maintain consistency and scale across the community. All right, there's definitely a lot of restrictions, and I'm gonna kind of go through them pretty quickly because I want to get to the design review process and I don't want to run out of time. Roofing materials and colors is a really big one in HOAs. And that is because of the aesthetic aspect of it. Landscaping standards will come up. It's not uncommon that you will have to submit a landscape plan to obtain HOA approval as part of the whole submittal package that we're going to talk about in a minute. And you might think, well, hey, it's my yard, I can plant what I want. Not so fast. HOA landscaping restrictions can be incredibly detailed, and violating them can result in fines. All right, let's get into the HOA design review process, because this is a really important part of this podcast episode. So you understand what HOAs are. You know what they restrict. Now let's walk through the actual HOA design approval process step by step, because this is where homeowners make their biggest mistakes, usually by engaging the HOA too late in the design process, or not by understanding what materials they need to submit, or by skipping steps that seem optional but are actually critical. So let me give you the insider roadmap based on, you know, these 35 years of navigating these processes. The single biggest mistake I see homeowners make is they hire an architect, they spend, you know, 3 to 6 months developing beautiful plans, they invest, you know, $15,000 to $30,000 in design fees, then they submit to the HOA for approval and they get denied. And now They're starting from scratch. So the correct sequence is completely different. Let me walk you through when you should be engaging with your HOA at each stage before you buy. So before you buy the property, and I mean before you're in contract, ideally you need to request a copy of the CC&Rs and the design guidelines from the HOA. Any good realtor should be able to get these for you. You need to review those documents for deal breakers. If you want to build a modern house and the HOA only allows Mediterranean, that's a deal breaker. Walk away from the property. Also, ask the seller or the realtor about the HOA's approval history. Are they strict or lenient? Do projects typically get approved, or is the design review committee known for being difficult? This is really valuable intelligence. Before you hire an architect, give your architect the HOA documents to review before you even sign an agreement with them. You want to verify that your architect has experience with HOAs and ideally experience in your specific community. If they've never worked in your HOA before, that's kind of a yellow flag, not necessarily a red flag, but you want to know that going in. Discuss the HOA requirements in your initial consultation and make sure they understand what they're dealing with. During the schematic design phase, as you know, this is the phase one of the design process that I've spoken about in previous episodes. And you want to submit preliminary concepts to the HOA for informal feedback, if they allow that. So not all HOAs do, but some will let you come in with sketches and say, hey, we're thinking about something like this. Are we in the ballpark? So that's incredibly valuable. Also consider attending a few HOA design review meetings just as an observer before your own application is ready. Sit in the back and watch how the committee operates. See what kinds of questions they ask. See what gets approved and what gets denied. This gives you insight into what they're looking for. And then adjust your design early based on the HOA parameters. Don't wait until you're deep into the construction documents to find out that you're not compliant. So the reason this sequence matters is simple. You want to avoid costly redesign after your plans are complete. And if you discover at the end of the design process that your entire architectural style is wrong, then you're starting over. And that's not just money, that's time. That's momentum. That's your enthusiasm for the project. It's kind of demoralizing. So now we know the timing is critical, but even if you engage at the right time, you need to understand who you're dealing with. Before we talk about that, let me just go through one real-life example of how an HOA design review committee does work in the early stages. So after you've done what we've talked about already, you've obtained the design review guidelines, you've understood what the parameters are, you've decided to move forward, the design committee has a process where you actually submit a set of plans, early stage plans in this schematic level for their formal approval. So a minute ago, we just talked about kind of a informal process, but there is a formal process that you'll want to do before you even go to the city planning department or building department. And I think we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the episode, but I just want to make sure that you understand that that is really one of the first approval processes that you'll go through. And of course, as the architect is working through the design process in general of your home, they'll be considering the HOA guidelines, but they'll also have to be considering the planning and building department guidelines as well, because as we talked about, you're going to need to get approval from both. All right, let's talk about the design review committee itself. It doesn't come from a faceless bureaucracy. It comes from a committee of your neighbors, and understanding who these people are and how they operate is essential to really getting approval. The committee goes by different names depending on the community. You might see it called the Design Review Committee or DRC, the Architectural Review Committee or ARC, the Architectural Review Board or ARB, the Architectural Control Committee. They're all basically the same thing. It's the group that reviews architectural applications and enforces the documented rules and regulations in the CC&Rs. So the composition is usually 3 to 7 volunteer homeowners from the community. Sometimes there are people with design or construction backgrounds. You might get an architect, a landscape landscape architect, a contractor. That's good when that happens because they can read plans and they understand the technical aspects. But often it's just regular homeowners who volunteer to serve. They might be retirees. They might be people who are really into design. They just might be civic-minded people who, you know, wanted to contribute to the community. The point is they're not necessarily professionals. These committee members are usually elected or appointed by the HOA board, and they serve terms, typically 1 or 2 years. So the committee composition can change over time, which means the committee preferences and tendencies can change too. So the committee's responsibilities include interpreting and enforcing the design guidelines, reviewing all the architectural applications that come in, and making a recommendation to the HOA board and ensuring compliance with the CC&Rs. So the meeting schedule is usually monthly in some communities, sometimes quarterly in smaller communities, and there's typically a deadline for getting your application in, usually about 10 to 14 days before the meeting. So if you miss that deadline, you're waiting another month. In a quarterly meeting community, you might be waiting 3 months. That can be a significant delay, of course. So as you're thinking about planning the design of your project, it already takes several months, sometimes a year, to get a complete set of plans and specifications and construction documents together to build a project. You have to factor in HOA timeline as well, because really you should be obtaining that approval before you go and submit to any planning or building departments, like I've already mentioned a few times. So, you know, I've attended HOA design review meetings where the committee had an architect, a landscape architect, and a contractor. Very qualified people who could evaluate the technical merits of what was being proposed. And that is the ideal situation. I've also attended meetings where the committee was 3 retirees with 0 design experience who just knew what they liked, quote unquote. And you know what? Your approval odds depend partly on who's sitting on that committee. So if you've got professionals, they're more likely to evaluate your project objectively. If you've got people who just have strong aesthetic preferences, it can be more unpredictable. All right, so you know when to engage the HOA. You know who makes up the committee. Now let's talk about what you actually need to submit for the review. This is where most applications can fall short just because they're incomplete. So every HOA has specific submittal requirements spelled out in their design guidelines. And if your application is incomplete, it won't even be reviewed at the meeting. They'll just table it and tell you to resubmit next month with the missing materials. So you need to make sure that you have everything. And this is where that kind of that informal process can really help, as if you can meet up with the HOA design review committee president or lead person, get an example of a project that has been submitted, like we talked about earlier, attending submittal meetings from other projects, positioning yourself as best as possible so that when you do submit your application, it is complete. And this principle goes all the way through your building and planning departments at your city and county. Because you could double the amount of time it takes to get a permit if you are constantly submitting inadequate materials to these jurisdictions. So I'm going to try to go quickly through a standard checklist based on what I've seen across hundreds of HOA applications over the years. So you'll have an application form, pretty straightforward. You just fill out all the information. The second one you're going to want is, or that they're going to likely require, is a property survey. And I've talked about surveys a million times now on this podcast episode, or this podcast series, or this podcast in general. Property survey is extremely valuable, and you will need it in order to submit to your HOA for approval. And what goes along with that is a site plan. And a site plan takes the considerations of the survey data that has been generated by your licensed land surveyor, and your architect will overlay the proposed project buildings on top of that, and that will give the design review committee a really good understanding of the topography, the heights and the elevations, the mass and the scale, and so on. This also shows the property lines, the easements, the required setbacks, and where the building footprint will be located, you know, right on the property, and ensuring that it conforms to all of these other requirements that we've talked about. and of course the slopes that will be shown, and that helps them understand. Also, another thing that's important on the site plan and the survey combination is showing the existing trees and landscaping, because the committee will want to know what's being removed or effective. And I have to say, a really important element that's not always on the checklist from the design review committees, but that can really help you get approval, is 3D renderings, exterior 3D renderings of the home as it's sitting on the site, especially if it's a sloping site. This is really what's helpful for people to visualize, especially for those people who are not professionals in the design or construction world. Now, it can also backfire on you too. You might be giving them too much information to scrutinize, but you're better off showing more, in my opinion, of this element of a design review committee submittal package, because you're just going to eliminate any problems or challenges later by the committee or by your neighbors. So the next one is the architectural plans, and this includes the floor plans, all the levels of the house, a foundation plan showing how this house sits on the property, a roof plan showing the roof layout and pitch, and a site plan, like I mentioned, showing the building placement. This is all kind of under the heading of the architectural plans. And then underneath the architectural plans is also the elevations. Now remember, elevations are two-dimensional drawings of each side of the home. And this is critical. You'll need the front, the back, the left, the right side elevations. And these elevations should be detailed, showing materials, colors, architectural features, windows and door styles, and height dimensions. The committee needs to see what your house will look like from every angle. And let me emphasize something really important here. It's not uncommon for an architect to render elevations that are not necessarily precise when it comes to the window style. And what I mean by that is you could have sliding windows, you could have double hung windows, the windows that slide up and down, the casement windows that swing out. There might be particular grid style that you want to have on your windows. Some windows are arched or not. If you do not show the correct rendering of the windows and the exterior doors and any other architectural element on the elevations or the 3D renderings, you could get yourself into trouble. Because if you're not complying with said materials, you could get yourself into a situation where you have to rip things out and replace them. Not unheard of with HOAs and design review committees. The other one they're going to be looking at are exterior material samples. This means actual physical samples of your siding material and color, your roofing material and color, trim colors, your door and window styles. If you're using stone or brick, you'll also want to bring samples of that too. The committee wants to see and touch these materials, not just look at pictures. Now, that's it. I have had good luck with having a digital material board, meaning not actual real samples, but they're pictures of the real products in an ensemble of materials. And then those materials are also depicted on the 3D renderings that we provide the design review committee. And that is often acceptable to many design review committees. So don't be afraid to start with that. And if they need actual physical materials, then you'll have to, you know, go out and hunt those down. They'll also be looking for paint color swatches. So you need to show the body color, the trim color, the door color, and any accent colors. And these have to be from the approved palette if your HOA has one. Don't just bring in some random colors from the paint store. Make sure they're pre-approved. So let me emphasize that. So many HOA design review committees have a wide range of color palettes that are acceptable for different homes. And if you understand those color palettes ahead of time, you can include those in your architectural design and renderings. And this is how you can just leapfrog right past that. If you declared that it's color palette number 12 that you've used, they can just glance through that and approve it because it already has been pre-approved. When you start to kind of go outside the boundaries, that's where you can get into a little bit of trouble. You're not necessarily, you may be able to do it, but you just have to be careful. The other thing is a landscape plan. So this can be a preliminary plan, depending on what stage you're at, but it should show the hardscape materials for the patios, the walkways, the driveways, the plant locations, and et cetera. This is not uncommon. And like I said, putting this all together into 3D renderings can really help you get approval. All right, let's get into a little bit more details about the process and the timeline. So we're gonna go through this pretty quickly because, as you can tell, this can just keep going on and on and on. And you may require a consultation for something like this, but we can talk about that another time later. You can reach out to me. But week zero, we're going to obtain the application package from the committee. In weeks 1 through 4, we're going to prepare the materials we talked about, the architectural design. You're going to hopefully have enough concepts together in about a month's time from the architect for the early schematic design stage that you'll use to submit. Remember, you already will have to have a survey in hand or at least a site plan in hand by the architect. It's week 5. You'll submit your application. Make sure you meet the deadline, which is usually 10 to 14 days before the scheduled meeting. And then week 6 and 7, the committee review period. They review your application before the actual meeting. They might contact you with questions if something's unclear. Week 8, the committee meeting itself. This is kind of the big day. The meeting is usually held on a weeknight evening. Your application will be on the agenda. And this is where you and your architect should absolutely attend. We'll talk more about that in a minute. And then week 9 is your decision notification. So that total timeline, you know, is, you know, 45 to 60 days of time before you should continue on with design, unless you're 100% confident that what you are submitting to the planning review committee, design review committee, is acceptable. Attending the meeting is kind of a really big opportunity for you. And I've attended several of these. So in the HOA application always says, you know, the attending the meeting is optional, but don't believe it. If you want to maximize your odds of approval, you or your architect, or ideally both of you, should absolutely attend the design review meeting. One of the messages that you send, or some of the messages that you send by attending the meeting, is that you are showing the design review committee that you are respecting the process. You're not just throwing an application over the fence and expecting them to approve it. Second, allows you to answer questions directly. And this is a huge one because a lot of questions can come up. You may even get really crazy questions like, well, can we not have a window here because it's looking over a neighbor's property? You're going to get a lot of these subjective design observations that aren't necessarily regulated by the CC&Rs. These are people's opinions that you have to address. Third, it lets you address concerns all the time as they come up. So you can clarify, you can explain your reasoning, you can show them additional materials. It demonstrates your commitment to the community standards. You're showing that you want to be a good neighbor and fit into the community. And it kind of humanizes your project so that not everybody's just looking at these lines on a paper. They can identify it with an actual person or family that's attending. All right, let me try to bring this all together. We've covered a lot of ground today, but unfortunately, I really couldn't cover every single thing that I wanted to in a podcast episode in a reasonable length. So I will have a dedicated blog post where you can read through a lot more detail. I mean, a lot more detail about what goes on with HOAs and how to navigate the process, because it's really a lot more complicated. There can be a lot more complicated than what I'm describing. But here's what you need to remember. HOAs are private governance systems that operate separately from your city or county government. The HOA design approval process typically takes 45 to 60 days minimum. It requires detailed submittal materials, including architectural plans, elevations, color samples, material samples, and ideally 3D renderings. And it benefits dramatically when you attend the design review committee meetings in person. HOA approval is part technical, but part political. You're navigating both the written guidelines and the subjective preferences of your neighbors who sit on that committee. Early engagement, professional presentation, and a respectful attitude make all the difference between approval and denial. And the bottom line is don't buy property in an HOA without thoroughly reviewing their design guidelines first. Don't hire an architect without giving them those HOA documents to review, and don't design your dream home without verifying it complies with both city requirements and HOA restrictions. You need both approvals. They don't coordinate with each other. You are managing both processes simultaneously. Well, as I mentioned, if you want to dive deeper into the HOA restrictions and limitations that you may have in designing your project, I'm going to have to pull the rest of this together in a blog post for everybody to really read through. And I really encourage you to do that if you're in an HOA, if you're in a restrictive HOA, and that you go through the entire blog post about it. You can also get the book, but I got to tell you that the whole purpose of this podcast is to be able to elaborate on what's in the book, because I couldn't get all that in the book as well. The book is going to give you a big picture of the whole process of designing and building a new home or remodel project, and this is my opportunity to elaborate on that. So you can go to the awakenhomeowner.com website, go to the blog page, and you'll see the posting there soon that you can actually navigate and read through. And I love hearing from listeners, you know, about your home projects and the challenges you're facing. If you've got a question about HOAs or any aspect of the design and construction process, please reach out. This is another example of where, you know, a private consultation might be valuable for you to try to navigate this HOA design review guidelines, and I'm happy to do that. You can reach out to directly at www.reed@theawakenedhomeowner.com. And you can also find me on Instagram and Facebook and message me if you like. I mean, if you're on YouTube, you can drop some comments below. I'll be happy to answer those. And I'm going to continue on with this design limitation series. I got to go back and look to see which one I want to tackle next. But I'm going to just keep continuing on, because we're trying to position you to be in the best spot before you either purchase your property or before you begin the design and construction of your project on a property that you already own. So I'm Bill Reed, your home building coach. And remember, we're here to enlighten, empower, and protect you for your new home, your dream home. We'll see you on the next one. Thanks for tuning into The Awakened Homeowner. Remember, you've got the power to take control of your project from day one. If you're ready to dive deeper, grab The Awakened Homeowner book on Amazon. It's your roadmap to success. Join our community at theawakenedhomeowner.com and download our free story, The Tale of Two Homeowners. And here's something exciting. I'm developing an app called BuildQuest that's going to revolutionize how you plan and manage your project. Visit buildquest.co to become a founding member and test drive the app when it launches. Follow us on social media and hit that subscribe button. All the links are in the show notes and bio. Got questions? I'd love to hear from you. This is Bill Reed. You got this.